On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. For decades in the 20th century, college was the majority domain of American men. In the 1970s and 80s, young women poured onto university campuses and quickly pulled even in numbers. Today, in a still head-turning reversal, American women far outnumber American men on campus, almost 60-40%, and they are now significantly outperforming men as well, making higher grades and taking top honors. Across the country, colleges are scrambling to lift male enrollment and grades and wondering what the trend means for the future of the country beyond school. Up next on Point, women in the lead and the booming gender gap in American colleges. Joining me first today from Bethesda, Maryland, is Jacqueline King, director of the Center for Policy Analysis at the American Council on Education. She is the author of a new study released this week, which shows that the gap between men and women on campus is widening. Jacqueline King, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
So here you are, number one conclusion, the most striking change since 2000, the widening gender gap among white and Hispanic, traditional age, undergraduates. What's going on?
Well, this change has largely been driven by an increasing female majority among low-income whites and low-income Hispanics. We do find with traditional age students that as income goes up, the gender gap narrows, and among upper-income students, there is no gender gap. It's generally a 50-50 split between men and women.
So the more affluent, the less gap. At the very tip top, as I read you, maybe slightly more men still at the tip top of the affluence scale. But overall, we're seeing the gap widening, not because you say fewer men are going, but because more women are pouring in here. What's the dynamic you see at work?
Absolutely, that's the case. College enrollment is going up for men and women. It's going up based on when you break that out by race, by income, you still see increased participation for both men and women. But women are increasing their college participation at a much faster pace than men.
And if you look at a slightly different skew on this, among the 40%, and that's a lot, of undergraduates who are age 25 or older, women outnumbering men by almost 2-1. Many colleges around the country, or maybe even the national average, moving toward nearly a 60-40 ratio here. This is by no means what history showed us in much of the 20th century.
Absolutely. Women started coming back to college later in life in the 80s, and we've seen that trend continue. With lifelong learning being so important to so many of us to keep current in our careers, to change careers, it's troubling that men do not seem to find their way back to college later in life the way that women do.
And now you've got college administrators sort of wringing their hands when it hits that 60-40 point. They're not comfortable. It's just, sort of getting out of whack in terms of gender balance. And something, as I read it here, something like affirmative action for men coming into play. The colleges want to keep a balance, and if they have to kind of tip the scales toward male applicants to help that happen, I'm reading here, administrators saying they're prepared to do that and are doing it.
Well, a small number of schools have been outspoken about the fact that they are doing that. The majority of schools are not. There's legal reasons to be concerned about taking that action for many institutions, especially public colleges and universities, and many others simply aren't comfortable with providing affirmative action, in essence, for men. That said, many institutions are trying to target men in their outreach efforts to try to entice men while they're still young men in high school to become more interested in attending college, especially young men of color and young men from lower income backgrounds.
I'm reading here an essay from Jennifer Delahunty-Britz from Kenyon College in Ohio saying that fat acceptance envelope is simply more elusive for today's accomplished young women. The reality is that because young men are rarer, they're more valued applicants. I mean, there's the finger on the scales.
Well, that may be the case at Kenyon College and at a small number of other private colleges that feel comfortable being upfront about the fact that they're providing a preference to men. I think that many other colleges either don't feel comfortable doing it from a legal standpoint or philosophically just don't think that that's the thing to do. That said, I think that they are targeting men, trying to target them aggressively in terms of outreach and recruitment.
Jennifer, Jacqueline King, take us through, if you would, some of the possible reasons for this yawning gender gap that, as you report, is growing wider. What are the schools of thought about why this is happening?
Well, there are a lot of different schools of thought. There's very little hard research, so it's sort of open season on theories and conjecture.
Mm-hmm.
You have people talking about everything from genetics and brain development to the way that schools treat boys and girls, to our popular culture and our notions of masculinity. One piece of this that I think people do agree on is that the economic incentives to go to college are different for men and women.
How so?
Women with a high school diploma really don't make enough to support themselves and certainly to support a family in this economy.
You're right. Women 25 to 34 with only that high school diploma, in 2004, their average income, $24,166, not much.
Yeah, not much. And so I think girls recognize fairly early on that they're going to have to get some level of post-secondary education in order to survive in our economy.
But high school diploma men in that same age range, only $30,000. It's not like big money, but you think that's enough of a margin of difference or something else there?
Yeah, I think so. For low-income students who are on the bubble about whether or not to attend college, that job in a warehouse or on a construction site may seem like a pretty good job when you're 18 and your back is strong. You may get health benefits on that job. But girls ringing up sales, you know, at the local store often won't be getting health benefits.
There's also a lot of buzz around whether or not our elementary schools and high schools are serving boys well, that somehow the school experience is souring them on education, throwing them off track.
There's a lot of buzz about that. There's very little hard research, and we were saying the opposite about our schools with regard to girls 20 years ago. So it's hard to know whether or not there really is something behind that.
Jacqueline King, throw your mind back if you can historically. What would, I don't know, American educators have thought if you told them in, pick a date, 1960, 1965, that one day women would outnumber and outperform men by a significant margin right across the board at American colleges? Could they have believed it?
It would have been hard to believe, but you know, before the GI Bill, we wouldn't have believed that we would have massive numbers of men from all backgrounds participating in higher education. Before the Civil Rights Movement, we wouldn't have believed that we would have large numbers of African Americans on our college campuses. So these big historical movements, in this case the women's movement, make a real difference in higher education.
Society changes, and the numbers are showing it right here. It's really eye-popping. Jacqueline King, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation from Durham, North Carolina, Thomas DePriet. He's professor of sociology at Columbia University. He's been studying the trend of women overtaking men at the university level in enrollment and achievement. Thomas DePriet, thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
You've looked a lot at this. I'm sure you've got a lot of thoughts about it. But top level, what's going on here?
Well, there's several things that are going on. One thing that's going on, which I think is important to point out, is that this phenomenon of women doing better in school is not new. Studies going back to the 1950s show that women have outperformed, girls have outperformed boys in school for a long, long time.
So they may have been a minority, but they were outperforming. Now they're in a majority and outperforming, so maybe it gets our attention.
That's right. But the difference is that in the past, the girls outperformed the boys, but they didn't go to college in the numbers you would have expected, given how well they did in school. And what changed, starting in the 70s and into the 80s and the 90s, is that girls went to college in the numbers that you would have expected, given how well they were performing in school. And what our research shows is that the really important difference between the boys and the girls is in the likelihood of completing college, given that you start it. The girls are more likely to complete than the boys, and the reason for it is simple. It's because they do better in their classes. If the boys did as well as the girls in their classes, they would complete in about the same numbers.
And so we get girls with higher grades, girls taking more honors, and taking honors, I have to say, some reports here, out of proportion to their presence in school. Here's Florida Atlantic University, Boca Raton, Florida. Women, 64% of the year's graduates, 75% of the honors degrees, 79% of the highest honors, summa cum laude. I mean, that's
That's well beyond the males.
That's right. But I'm saying that's been true for a long time. The difference is that before, the girls were outperforming the boys in fourth grade, eighth grade, 10th grade. But they weren't going to college in the same number as the boys. Yeah. Now that they are, their performance gap is evident in the colleges as well.
And there it is. It turns our head, Jacqueline King, because college is kind of the royal road to position and influence in our society very often. Does this portend a change in the American workplace? Does it roll right on forward? Do you anticipate, you know, first it was elementary school, then high school, now college? Is it the corner office next?
Well, it hasn't happened so far, and women have been the majority on college campuses now for some time, and yet we still continue to see a very persistent wage gap between men and women. Part of the reason why women may be performing so well in college is they may feel that they need to do everything they can to give themselves every advantage, because in the workplace, they're typically not rewarded as well as men are.
So we see them going for it and going for it hard, and lots of anecdotal reporting on men kind of hanging back, maybe even coasting. Jacqueline King at the American Council on Education, thank you for your report, and thank you for sharing the numbers with us today. It's been great having you. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Patrick's calling right now from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Patrick. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
We're well. What do you think, Patrick? What do you make of it?
Well, you know, you talk a lot about, you know, statistics, you know, genetics, whatever. But I finished up high school. I just finished up my first year of college, actually. And I can tell you, you can't discount the nerdy factor, you know, being uncool. There, it's just a fact that the more into your studies that you are, the less that the popular kids, you know, quote-unquote, will consider you one of them. It may be, you know, a problem with authority, with teachers. It may be insecurity about not being smart enough, but I don't think you can discount that.
So the nerdy factor, nerdiness, as in equating effort, academic effort with nerdiness?
Yes. I mean, for instance, I know that they're coming out with new clothing lines for IT in women departments because women are, you know, graduating higher in math and science, but they still want to be, you know, women. I guess.
No, wait a minute. I feel a little dense here. New clothing lines for IT, industrial information technology, I mean? What is that, with special pockets for calculators in women's couture?
I don't know about special pockets, but, you know, just giving them more of a, you know, a sexy appeal and not making them feel like they are nerdy.
So making it cool for women and guys not getting on that same train.
Yeah, I feel that, you know, guys just feel that it's all given to them. I mean, I went to public school, I went to private school, and I tell you, in public school, there's no one behind you. There's no one pushing you. There's no one telling you that you have to do this. And if there isn't, they won't.
Patrick, let me ask you, do you think that guys in college feel like they're going to do just fine in the workplace, whether or not they shine at college? And why do they believe that's true if they're not getting the top grades?
I'll tell you, I go to a very artsy college, so there aren't a lot of people like this there, but I know of many kids I went to high school with that now go to large universities, big party schools, lots of frat houses. They can't see past the end of their noses. You know, daddy owns a dealership, he's got a job lined up for me when I get out, or they just don't care. They just don't know that there's something after college called real life that you'll need to be prepared for.
Patrick, you're hot. Keep up the social analysis and come back to us again. It's great to have you. Thanks for calling in from Buffalo. Let me get a call from Houston, Texas. Pete is on the line. Hi, Pete. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
This resonates very much with me. I'm a university professor, and you can see that in general, if you want to pick out the hardworking, serious ones, go for the females. And this very complicated issue, of course, but I think that one thing that needs to be considered is that until kids get to college, there's a difference, I think, a small difference, or maybe a big difference in the culture of schools, in that boys are often given the impression that how fast you run is maybe even more important than how fast you think.
Mm-hmm.
Being exceptional at hitting a ball with a stick is considered, you know, something that they ought to aspire to.
Girls' sports are pretty strong now as well, Title IX and all that, but you're saying they still put academics first.
I think so. Certainly girls play sports more often, but they don't seem to put their whole life into it. They don't see that if they can't hit a ball with a stick farther than somebody else, they don't take so much of their self-image from that. And boys do so much more.
Pete, I don't know how long you've been in the business as a university professor, but do you see boys diminishing in their academic ambition, or is it kind of a steady state behind the girls?
Oh, I think that that in general the quality of students diminishes both boys and girls, but girls are diminishing less, I think.
Oh, wow, there's another factor even more disconcerting. Pete, thank you very much for calling in. Thanks for your perspective there. I want to welcome another voice into our conversation now, along with Thomas DePreet. We have Judith Kleinfeld with us from Fairbanks, Alaska. She's professor of psychology at the University of Alaska. She's founder and director of the Boys Project, which aims to increase academic success among boys and men and to develop their confidence. Judith Kleinfeld, thanks very much for being with us. What's going on with men at college?
I have some data that answers Jackie King's excellent question about what's going on.
Yes, please.
I asked the kids. I interviewed over 200 kids from every background, but particularly working class and minority kids. And I asked them, hey, what's going on with this gender gap? What are your plans after high school and why? And first, let me just tell you about the body language.
Okay.
Because it just hit you in the head. The girls come in for the same recorded interview, and they are bright, and they are alert, and they look you in the eye, and they are ambitious, and they are helpful. They're just fireball. And the guys sort of shuffle in, and they sit down, and often they won't meet your eyes, and they're confused. This is not everybody, of course, but girls of every background are just wonderful, and I credit the women's movement to what has gone on for girls.
So that's worked for them. What's not working for boys that would leave them in that mindset?
Okay, let me give you the four big reasons that kids talk about, and this is also supported by economic data. Number one, what's driving the girls? Because that's where the big changes happen. The boys are kind of flatlined. What the girls say is, I have to support myself. It's very simple. You can't depend on a man to support you.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother is telling me, don't get stuck like I did. My father is telling me, we want you to succeed. My teachers are telling me, the world is your oyster. And this was the one that surprised me. Even my boyfriends are telling me they want a smart woman. They do not want to have the economic responsibility for a house.
Wow, so big motivators behind the young women. And what about...
Big motivator, yes. And the girls say, well, what do I want to do? I want a good job. I want a meaningful job. I want to contribute. The girls are the only ones who say things like, I want to combat AIDS in Africa. Boys, you never get anything like that.
Take us on down through your list, Professor Kleinfeld. What else is there?
Okay. And the only way to do that is to go to college. And they're going to college, and they're giving it their all. Now, what's going on with the guys? The guys face a golden trap. And this is how it works. They're 18 years old. And it's just as, I think it was Jackie said, maybe they can work at Walmart and be a floor manager or work at night. And, wow, you get $20 an hour.
Yep.
So they say, I can live at home. I can make money. I can get that car. And the idea that, as one of the kids put it, why should I pay school when I can get paid? And this is feeding into another factor that the boys go on about. The boys are not angry that the women are succeeding. Quite the contrary. Mm. They applaud the women's success. First of all, it's going to help them out. They don't want to be the sole breadwinner.
Yep.
But here's what they say. They say, I go on the web and I try to get a scholarship. And now all these scholarships, they're for women. They're dedicated scholarships. They're scholarships to help women or minorities. If you're a white working class kid, there's nothing for you. They've even done graphs of it. They've got 3-1. And this is compounded by another problem. Boys have a great deal of difficulty filling out applications. What they say is they're too lazy. But really, it's just a daunting task. And the whole idea of doing the paperwork and filling the forms out and applying for scholarships, I mean, they say they'd rather work for the money doing heavy labor in the summer.
You know, it sounds like a pretty minimal hurdle given the potential life benefit of doing it, but maybe they're onto some economics here that elude me long-term at the moment. Judith Kleinfeld, stand by. Thomas DePreet, I want to put it to you. What do you think of the set of reasons that Judith begins to lay out there? Do they match up with what you've found? You've got an article in the journal Demography looking at the value of education for men and women. Is there a big difference in the value?
Well, women gain from education in two ways. I mean, they gain in the labor market and they also gain in the marriage market. I mean, one of the things that's happened in this country over the last 20 years is that there's been a rise in something called educational homogamy, which means the tendency of people to marry each other of the same level of education.
Yep.
I think that it's fair to say that women are a bit more forward-looking when they're in their late teenage years than guys. And I think that many girls are realizing that with expanding opportunities in the labor market as a consequence of the decline in discrimination against women that was pervasive in the 50s and the 60s, that they can use the education in the labor market, but they can also use the education in the marriage market, because the best way to marry a college-educated guy is to be college-educated yourself. And the fact that the divorce rate rose substantially in the country over the 70s into the 80s creates greater risks for women than it does for men, because if there are children and there's a divorce, the woman is the one who's going to have the children to take care of. And higher education provides insurance against falling into poverty.
Is there something canny in the young men's analysis of what's going on here? Are they just being foolish, or are they onto some, at whatever level they come to it, onto something true, that they don't need to work as hard to do all right lifelong?
Well, I don't think it's canniness, and I don't think it's foolishness. I think the problem is that they're not fully informed about how the labor market has changed. Once upon a time, if you had a high school education, you could make good money working in the steel industry, working in the auto industry, working in a variety of heavy manufacturing settings. And since the early 1980s, there's been a tremendous rise in inequality in this country. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that was driven by a decline in the wages for people with high school education.
But this is anything but breaking news. I mean, this has been going on, as you say, for a quarter century now. Are boys, young men, that slow to pick up on the fact that they'll be advantaged by going and by doing well in college?
Well, I think that the fact that it's apparent it's apparent to me and you that the labor market has changed, but I don't know that it's fully apparent to 17-year-old boys.
I wonder what it's going to mean.
If you look at the New York Times article last Sunday that Tamara Lewin wrote, there were many citations of these boys who are saying, "Oh well, you know, I know somebody who makes $70,000 a year, and he's got a high school education."
Or if they're in college, saying, "What's the difference between an A and a B? Either way, you go on to the next class."
Right, right. But the thing is there's tremendous variation. I mean, there's people that win the lottery in this country who have no education at all, but that doesn't mean that you're likely to win the lottery.
I want to turn to our listeners, if I may, for a moment. There's one you don't want to bet the farm on. Kareem is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Kareem. You're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. I think I'm wondering why, with all the struggles and the odds stacked against women that they've fought against so far, and just look at your last show. There were no female experts on there. Just an observation. And
Hard at it. We don't always make it happen.
I know, Tom. No, you're a good guy. But I'm just wondering why shouldn't we just accept this and look at the state of the world? It's not like maybe women couldn't do a better job.
So you're saying, what's the problem here? If women are performing better, let it be. So be it.
There you go.
Well, let's pick that up. Judith Kleinfeld, how about it? If we've got a meritocracy, if women happen to be at the top of the heap in numbers and performance, what does it matter?
There are several reasons. First, we're losing a lot of talent. We went through a period where we were losing the talents of women, and we addressed that. Now we are losing the talents of young men. They're turning off, they're coasting, they're souring on school, and it's not good for the nation, for our productivity. It's also not good for women, because most women want a partner with compatible education and values, and they can't find them. This has been going on in the African community, American community, for many years, and now it's starting to go into many other communities.
So you're saying you're going to have a group of men who aren't going to be a real fuel cell for the country down the road, and the country needs them. Thomas DePriet, what's your view? Does it matter? If we've got enough women stepping up with enough shine, enough performance, is that fine?
Well, I mean, I guess a couple of things. I think it's great that the women are taking advantage of the opportunities in this country. the men are not doing worse. I mean, I think that's a misconception, that the fact that the women are doing better does not mean that the men are doing worse. Men's rates of college attendance and college completion are going up, too. They're just not going up as fast as women's. I mean, and I think that's a problem for men. The problem isn't created by the women. The problem is created by the labor market. And I think it's something that needs to be addressed.
But our caller Kareem says, okay, you've got a labor market, but women will fill its demands if they're at the top of the heap, or could. And is there a fundamental problem with that? Judith Kleinfeld says, yes, there's still a problem because you're underutilizing an important resource here. Do you think it's a significant problem or not for the country?
Well, I think it's a problem that is reflected in the fact that men, for that matter, women that have high school education or have less than college, they really don't do well in the labor market. And not doing well in the labor market is a problem.
Makes unhappy people ultimately in a less than fully productive country. Elliot's calling from Manchester, New Hampshire. Hi, Elliot. You're on the air.
Hello. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Good to have you. What do you think, Elliot?
Well, I wanted to touch back on to another caller mentioned something along the lines of the nerd factor.
Yes, the nerdiness factor.
Yes, the nerdiness factor. I think that part of the problem that men are having in being successful in college is that expectation. Not that the nerdy factor actually exists in college, but that their expectation of the way that they're supposed to act and the what they're going to be expected to do once they get to college is wrong.
But why is that any different today, Elliot, than decades ago? I mean, when it was, cowboy and Indian movies that were at the top of the sort of cultural mind, you know, cowboys weren't college degree holders, and yet lots of guys went to college in those days and didn't think of it as nerdy. They thought of it as ambitious and cool.
Okay, but then you bring up the labor market and how, you know, 50 years ago, if a guy went to college and went there to be cool and get straight C's and graduate, he could do anything, you know, job at the bank, you know, president of the United States, senator, anything. Whereas today, you know, getting C's could translate in getting D's or F's, and, you know, that job market isn't going to be as available for you.
And so the coolness doesn't automatically come with it. Judith Kleinfeld, what do you make of that instant analysis?
I think he's right about the nerdy factor, and I don't understand how it has changed, because you're quite right as well. It's always been there. Partly, parents aren't pushing so many of these boys, and this has to do with the increase in single-parent families. What overcomes the nerdy factor for upper-middle-class educated boys is that their parents are saying, hey, nerdy, what are you talking about? We want you to go to college. We want you to do well. How did you do on that last test? They've got someone behind them pushing them. They can't go into this peer group nerdy. It just doesn't matter. Their parents are on their tail.
I've been joined by Thomas DePreet, professor of sociology at Columbia University, by Judith Kleinfeld, professor of psychology at the University of Alaska, founder and director of the Boys Project, aiming to help men step up to succeed in school. And right now from Columbus, Ohio, we're joined by Mac Stewart, Vice Provost and Chief Diversity Officer at Ohio State University. He sees women graduating at a higher rate than men and doing better in school. He started a special initiative 5 years ago to help African American men succeed at Ohio State and complete college. Mac Stewart, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you very much, Tom, for having me.
Let me ask you just first of all, we've seen racial disparities in college attendance levels and performance for a long time. Now this gender gap is getting a lot of attention. Do you resent that? Do you see that as, you know, as less a problem than ethnic and racial disparities in this country?
Not necessarily, but I'm pleased that you said it, because for a long time, and this is something just by chance that I observed when I was in high school, and that's a few years ago, that ratio of college attendance for African Americans happened to have been 60-40. That's 60% females, 40% male. And if we look at data today, we will see that that hasn't changed that much. That breakdown is very similar.
Now, the breakdown, the gap has been opening for lower-income whites and Hispanics. It's always been a significant gap, as you say, for African-American men. Do you look at this as one of your challenges as a diversity officer? Is maleness now a factor that you consider? Are you working in an affirmative way to get males in and keep males in particular?
Now, maybe I should add that at Ohio State, give you some feel for that perspective. We have not seen at Ohio State the wide gap that was quoted in the New York Times article, the 60-40. The only place that we have the 60-40 would be with the African-American population.
And is that across gender, or is that African-American women 60, African-American men 40?
That's correct.
Okay, okay.
And the New York Times article, it mentioned that was the case for higher education in general.
Approaching that level.
Approaching that level. And here it has been over a span of time closer to the, say, 51-49. And that's and by the way, as I say that, it would be that the males continue to be the larger number.
At Ohio State, very big public university,
you see
the opposite of this trend. Still, yes. Males. Why does that happen? Why do you think you're an outlier there on the national trend?
I feel that not only Ohio State, but at looking at data from the Big Ten institution,
mm-hmm.
Those that happen to have a wide array of offerings. Academic offerings to students. And if you have areas in there such as I would refer to as applied areas, as engineering, a college
mm-hmm.
of engineering,
mm-hmm.
that's big, college of agriculture, and a college of business, those institutions you will observe somewhat similar to Ohio State, where, say, 52% of the students would be males, and more like 47.5 or so would be female.
Now, there's the very interesting counter-ratio. Judith Kleinfeld, what do you make of that? Here's Ohio State, very big school, and Max Stewart says, you know, give them some practical applied subjects to study, and you're going to have plenty of men, a majority in Ohio State's case.
Since the national ratios are so skewed, what this means is that the men are moving towards the Big Ten. And why is that? One reason might be that the Big Ten have a tremendous sports emphasis, and that is going to be a draw.
Wow. So we're still there, perhaps, with the nerdy factor stuck on the outside and sports drawing the guys in. Maybe. Paul's calling from Glens Falls, New York. Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
Hi. I was just curious to know as to what your panel thought of the rate of success for men and women and the developmental age difference between the men and women, whereas males typically mature around age 25.
So you're looking at actual sort of development maturation rates and whether that might be a factor here. Max Stewart, what do you make of that? The Ohio State incoming class, do you see women just more mature, developmentally more ready to take on university?
I would have to agree with the caller that developmentally the women would be ahead of the males, and we can see this even before that time. It's just as he indicated, that we notice in elementary school as well as in high school that the females often will do very well. And so I think this is a carryover into colleges where we see this performance that we are looking at today.
Judith Kleinfeld, we've heard a lot about developmental issues in the younger years of school. I mean, is that really still in play all the way into college? At what point do men catch up? Do they ever?
Yes, it is in play, and this caller is absolutely right. Males develop more slowly and for a longer period, just as in height. Women are through with their growth way, way before men. And this has an interesting policy consequence. Many people are now suggesting maybe we need to have an alternative after high school to let men mature. The interesting thing about the GI Bill was that men went into the military, they came back more mature, more serious. Maybe we should have public service alternatives, structured alternatives, so that they can get those couple of years on and get out of the nerdy, drinking, frat boy lifestyle.
I'm sure that the Pentagon would love to promote that as an idea, but is it that clear, that significant? I mean, yes, we had the GI Bill, and that pushed a lot of men into college. On the other hand, Vietnam pushed men into college for the opposite reason, not the GI Bill, but wanting to avoid that kind of service. And I don't remember university professors in those days, Judith Kleinfeld, saying men just aren't ready for tertiary education.
At that point, the frat boy culture, where it was cool to just lean back and drink beer, that was just the accepted college Joe way of thinking. What you got now is the same college Joes. The guys haven't changed. But what you're getting is contrasted there. Now the college Joes are behind these fireball women who are just giving it their all and with great success. So they look worse.
Let me take a call from Johanna. Hi, Johanna, you're on the air.
Hi. The question has come up of whether this gender gap will continue in the workplace, but I think that one of the most important questions this study brings up is why the gender gap is so huge in the other direction after college. If you look at the data, you see women dropping out at every level after college.
You're dropping out of the workplace.
Exactly. I was one of 50% of, I was in graduate school, there were about 50% women. I myself didn't even do a postdoc, and I'm an instructor at Boston University, and I'm one of six instructors, and I'm the only woman.
So you're saying it's not all this advance on women's part and their dominance in college is not translating into workplace position or even stickiness, adhesiveness. They're not sticking in?
Exactly. I mean, I think one of the obvious answers is that the infrastructure for women and families isn't there after college. But I think that it's important to look at this these data and say, you know, how can we translate this from college to the workplace?
Do you think it will ultimately happen, Johanna, that all these numbers, the weight of the female numbers in college and the weight of their performance will change workplace, hierarchy, the glass ceiling, corner office, and all the rest, or not?
No, I don't think so, because I think women have been achieving at this level in college for quite some time, as has been mentioned earlier in the conversation. And I think that there's so much infrastructure in the workplace and in the professional fields that hurts women and hurts women with families, that it's really impossible to achieve this kind of gap in the other direction, or even for women to have equal footing in the workplace.
Thomas DePreet at Columbia University, how do you see that? Women moving from strength to strength in the educational realm, does it inevitably at some point catapult them into, you know, sort of the boss position in the workplace, or is Johanna's pessimism about that justified?
Well, I mean, Johanna has a good point, and there was just a recent study that I've done of scientific careers that showed that in science, especially in the hard sciences, women trail men substantially. And one of the reasons for that is because scientific careers require such intense commitment and energy and nonstop work over the first 10 years of the career at a time when many women want to start families, which creates a big disadvantage. So there are still obvious disadvantages for women in the workplace that need to be addressed.
Judith, do you think if the gap is so great that ultimately women jump it here? I mean, are we building? Yes, there's been a male advantage in our culture for a long time, but we're describing something quite significant statistically here. Do you think it ultimately makes the leap, translates into, if not dominance, then parity in the workplace?
I don't think there's ever going to be parity in the workplace as you define it, and there's a really simple reason for that. Life isn't fair, sue God. The problem is this, and you see it with the most high-achieving women from Yale, Harvard, I see it everywhere. When a woman reaches her early 30s, most of the time she wants to have a child. That takes her for 9 months of pregnancy at a point where she isn't at her physical peak. And hormonally, she changes, and usually she wants to spend time with her child. She wants to raise the child, at least in part herself, and not leave the child with nannies. Her whole focus in life changes. With men, having a child, the statistics show, has just the opposite effect. It makes them more energetic, more ambitious, and more wanting to be in the workplace. There are just some tough choices out there. And if a woman wants, and I applaud those women who do, to focus every ounce of her energy on her career, go for it and do well. And the statistics show she'll be equal to men. But if the woman wants to balance family and career, she is probably not going to get to the top, at least not if she wants to raise the children herself.
Even when that dominance is there in college, and that's a very interesting picture. We've got so many listeners who want to join us. But let me bring another in from Grinnell, Iowa. Patrick is on the line. Hi, Patrick. You're on the air.
Yes. I just wanted to make a comment also in agreement on the statements earlier that I think now that young women have much more of a push toward going to and succeeding in college. One example would be my girlfriend, who is probably going to end up being more educated than me because she wants to go into be a psychologist. And I'm just in a computer science where having a bachelor's degree is plenty to get a good job. And I think that, you know, having me say, hey, keep going on, do what you want, and then having her family and many people going to her saying, do the, all this, and then, you know, as opposed to most men maybe just have that kind of like expected of them as opposed to just encouraged.
Patrick, do you feel like you're slacking off by comparison or that she's really got more motivation than you do? Do you welcome this?
Oh, I don't think that necessarily I'm slacking off. I just think that and I welcome the fact that she'll probably make more money than me too, knowing the way things go, but I think I actually welcome it, and I think there's many more men in my position who think that having a woman in their life that is much more educated is much more desirable than having, you know, so that you have a good relationship, good conversations and things without having to, you know, having being on the same level.
Right, and maybe, well, lucky if you're on the same level, and maybe more income from that woman as well. Watch out, women. You may end up doing all the work here, workplace and home. Patrick, thanks for calling. Beth is calling. Hi, Beth. You're on the air.
I actually have this problem from both ends. My husband's an attorney and has often commented about how law schools are predominantly female these days. And yes, legal firms are making great strides in hiring more young female attorneys. And yet, at a certain point in their career, usually just as they are making partner, guess what? They leave to start a family.
So if women are our best educated citizens, but they've got that biological factor in there, what are the implications? Is that just fine or not, Beth?
Well, here's the other side of the story. I have a 16-year-old son who is a white male here in the United States,
yep.
And I, as his mother, am really, really concerned about his future, if you want to call it that.
Because he's not motivated, or why?
Well, at the moment, he's, you know, going through the trials and tribulations of adolescence.
Okay.
So, I mean, the jury's still out.
So what's your
point.
Concern exactly?
Well, my concern is that I know that the graduate programs are becoming more and more female-dominated.
Yes, they are.
In our colleges and universities, which is a good thing from my own personal point of view. On the other hand, I don't want my son to get squeezed out. And will he be squeezed out because he's developmentally a little behind the female population? That's my excuse for it. I mean, I really don't believe
right.
that all men are just plain foolish and not capable.
Nor do we, but our time is short. Let us pick that up. Max Stewart, how about, do you see a kind of mismatch between developing, between the graduates that we're putting out, gender-wise or any other way, and the needs of the country?
Not really, if I understood the question correctly. I think that, and I want to comment on something a little earlier, too.
Yes, sir.
And this is a slightly different take on mm-hmm. that as to if there will ever be a level playing field gender-wise.
Mm-hmm.
While I agree with my colleagues on the panel, I would take a look even right here at Ohio State. I think in some particular areas in education, we might see that more so than if you were in the business world. And that is the president of this university, the largest, close to it, one of the largest in the country, female,
mm-hmm.
the provost,
mm-hmm.
female.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the deans of the colleges happen to be female. So, but that comes about only from the discussion we heard earlier as well, whereas that when they get to that particular time, when one is seeking tenure, where one is also concerned about having a family, that they will be able to stop the clock. That there will be some, a system that is responsive to the particular needs and desires.
But here are women who have succeeded in an academic setting. Do you think, our time is so short, but do you have any concern that they create a culture that will favor women that will further disadvantage men, or is that just paranoia?
I think that my perception is that paranoia.
Okay. There we'll take heart. We'll count on women to do the right thing. We're going to need them to, clearly, with this level of accomplishment. And with that, I'm afraid we're out of time. Max Stewart, Vice Provost and Chief Diversity Officer at Ohio State University, joining us from Columbus, Ohio. Mr. Stewart, thank you very much for being with us today.
You're quite welcome. Thank you.
And Judith Kleinfeld, all the way up in Fairbanks, Alaska, where the nights are long and the winters are cold. Judith, thank you very much for your comments and observations today. very helpful.
Very much fun. Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. And Thomas DePriet joining us today from Durham, North Carolina, professor of sociology at Columbia University. Professor DePriet, wonderful to have you. Thank you very much for joining us.
Same. Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.